So as usual, you may raise your hand to ask your questions directly. And then we can also ask them anonymously via the chat function.
Okay, good. There are no questions today.
So, let's see. I have one. So how would a yogi know what his or her defilements are weakening?
Yeah, that actually, that you yourself know that you have to assess your defilements. So you can comparatively say, because of the practice, that the defilements has reduced. Say, for example, you are a person very quickly get angry. Assume like that. So even a fly come close to your face, you become extremely angry. Even slightest, mistake of another, you become extremely angry. If you are like a person with short temperament, assume now you start the practice. You start to improve mindfulness. You start to develop mindfulness. Assume that after 1 year, after 2 years, you are recognizing, okay, I am not immediately going to react now. The same problems are arising, same issues are arising, but I am not immediately going to react like before. Immediately now I am not going to become angry. I have some breaks. I am able to somewhat calm down myself. I am able to sort of control myself, control these defilements. So likewise, you yourself will assess your mind, how you behave. So with that only you can recognize, okay, there is a significant change in myself. There is a behavioral change in myself. So my whole character has somewhat changed. Now I am not becoming immediately react. So I am not immediately going to be angry. I am not going to immediately go and argue, get into quarrels. But now I have some breaks. I am able to step back and watch what's really going on. So likewise, you are able to assess yourself. So then this is how slowly that we can understand, okay, because of the practice, our defilements are slowly reducing or fading away.
Thank you, Bante. And I'd like to invite Teacher
Devi
to please ask the next question.
Yes, thank you. So, Bante, in our home environments, it is easier to be able to practice some of these methods that you discussed today. But when we go out into the open and, in our workplaces and various other places, people, shouldn't you also have to discuss certain things with certain individuals who are constantly causing agitation or doing the wrong thing? And then shouldn't you sit down and explain to them or try to tell them, that because it's sort of, if you're continuously coming up with certain irritations, I mean, yes, you can watch it and so forth, but it's a very negative effect that it has. So shouldn't you sit down with the people concerned and have a discussion? Isn't that also another method to get equanimity?
Yeah, that, yes, that we can say. So in case if the other person is ready to listen, ready to coordinate, then we can go for that kind of a cordial discussion and explain them what is really going on. If there is any kind of a misunderstanding, that we can remove it. So likewise, this kind of a discussion is quite useful. I mean, those are in a way some practical approaches that we can use. Here actually the Buddha's methods are quite related to one's own internal development, that one is looking at one's own mind, how one's own mind become agitated. So the other party is simply an agent, helps us to recognize these defilements. So it is not that we always can correct the other side, because there may be a possibility that we can correct the other side, but it's less chances, because we are not sure that whether the other party is ready to listen, ready to coordinate, or say, they may recognize our advice, appreciate our advice. So this is not sure always. But as you said, if they are ready to coordinate, if they are ready to listen, then we can try, no harm. But on the other hand, even when the other party is sort of trying to agitate us or trying to, I mean, they are doing various mistakes, how our mind get agitated? So this is where the question comes. So there are always people who are causing us troubles, but how we get angry? If there is no potential at all in the mind to get angry, then there is no way of agitation. Then there is no way of becoming angry. So we also has roots. We also has causes. We also have the potential, tendency to get angry. So that is where the Buddha is addressing. So we can temporarily sort out the issue by talking with another person, but it actually temporarily calm down the situation. But there's another person come and agitate. Then we are going to talk with him. Assume there's another person going to come and trouble us. Then are we going to talk with him? So likewise, it's possible, no problem, but it is kind of, you are trying to correct the others continuously, but if we are not correcting our side. So the Buddha's approach here is to look at one's own mind. It's a kind of a introvert kind of an approach. You are looking at your own sort of drawbacks, how the mind has agitated, and this agitated state is quite heavy, quite gross, and it's some sort of fabrication that we ourselves did. So this is in a way very intricate, very subtle observation of the mind, and return back to that unagitated state, stable state. Assume that at a given time, even when the others are trying to agitate us, even when the others trying to make us angry, if we are not becoming angry, if we are able to maintain the clarity of the mind, if we are able to maintain the stability of the mind, so that indicates some sort of an improvement. That indicates some amount of a maturity in ourselves. So when the others coming and blame you, others coming and sort of looking down you, condemning you, still you are maintaining your, say, stability. So that is actually indicating some maturity.
So Bhante, in this Chabbisodhana Sutta, that is at a very high level. No, Bhante, because he's an arahat, I don't think we can be following those things, can we?
Basically, once you reach the certain level of vipassana, so you start to... Now, the explanation given here is arahant is explaining his own path, not after becoming an arahant, but what is the path he has followed to become an arahant. So that is why it is applicable to the others as well. So this is the some sort of a path that he have continuously used, using which he is able to eradicate the fetters, uproot the influxes, uproot the, say, what you call this latent tendencies. So the vipassana yogi also time to time reach this state, this practical state. So say, for example, that's why I have taken an example. While in the walking path, you have to keep your eyes open. There are a lot of sounds going on. There are a lot of other distractions available. But at the same time, assume that at a given state, your mind stays with you without getting distracted. So you are able to maintain the stability of the mind. You are able to maintain the clarity of mind, irrespective of those sense impingement. So that is the place that we need to further improve. So that uninvolved state of mind, unagitated state of mind, so that, say this, freedom of mind. So this is somewhat that we need to further and further develop.
So, Bhante, last time in our discussion, you said that we have to be all the time you know, in a state of, it's not only on, in the cushion, but it's also in our daily life. So I don't know whether I'm wrong, but I just feel more and more now we have to be doing Vipassana just in our ordinary life, Abhante, in the sense that these are the things that are coming up. When you're sitting in the cushion, you sit in a peaceful place and you're not moving and you're very, you know, you can go into a very good level, state. But more and more time now we have to involve in this. In our daily life, when we come face to face with everybody and situations, and I suppose that's the time we have to do the Vipassana. Would you agree with me, Bhante?
Yes, 100% agree. 100% agree, because this is the battle place in a way. So your cushion while at your training is in a way, that is in a way a kind of a training place. But how, where you apply your practice is at your office, at your, with your family members, with your neighbors, with, at the storehouse, wherever it is. So that's why the practice has to be fully practically applied throughout our life. So that is where the various, because I mean, while on the cushion, the possibility of arising defilements is very less. But while you are dealing with others, the possibility is very high. So there you have to be mindful. There you have to understand how mind has become agitated, how you become angry. There you have to be mindful, and again you have to come back to that unagitated state, that stable state, that equanimous state. How quickly that you are able to return back. So this is what some nowadays calling as resilience. So as you develop mindfulness, your resilience is going to develop. So you can return back to that baseline, return back to that unagitated state. So that returning, the time taken to that returning going to improve as you, so actually improve in the sense, I mean, become less and less as you develop mindfulness. So your resilience is going to develop as you enhance your mindfulness.
So we can do less and less cushion meditation, would you say that is correct?
No, it depends actually. So you got to decide, so what is the state of the mind? So you are the ones knowing, okay, is my mind can handle appropriately, properly the ongoing situation? Or am I need some amount of further clarity of mind? Is it necessary to have more mindfulness? So therefore, coming back to sitting is also required. But not like the previous stages. Suppose in your previous stages, you have prepared a timetable. You want to cover, say, 10 hours, 11 hours, whatever it is that you have sort of regimented your practice. But now it is not different, not like that. So you are living the practice from your very moment that you wake up till you go to the sleep. The whole day is a practice session in a way. So there you need to see, so how many times you got somewhat carried away by the defilements, driven by the defilements, how much you are unmindful. So those are the areas that we need to correct. So that further requires some amount of, say, development of the mindfulness, further strengthening of the, say, the samadhi, concentration. So they, now you go back to the cushion. You further develop that samadhi, because it is necessary to have some seclusion. That is also necessary. Because assume that you went through a really hectic day. So then you might have lost your sort of calmness altogether. Then you have to again repair yourself. Something like that.
Oh, yes, Bhante. So it is a continuous training, Bhante, at the end of the day, wherever you are, you have to continuously do the training.
Exactly.
And sometimes it's not easy, Bhante.
Definitely. It is challenging. Definitely it is challenging.
There are very camper ways, moments which can be rather trying at times, Bhante.
Yeah, sure. Because I mean, these failures are the ones showing us where we are weak. So where are the areas that we have to further develop, and why still this is happening to me? Assume that you are doing years of practice. Why still you get angry? Why still you become lustful? Why still your mind become sort of agitated? why still your mind become entangled. So these are the areas that we need to further develop. We need to further address.
Yes, Bhante, thank you.
Yeah, we are our own teacher in a way.
Yes, yes, of course. But we have to have the guidance as well, Bhante.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Oh.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Bhante, please explain how we should choose the company we keep in this progression.
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Sure. Could you please explain how we should choose the company we keep in this progression?
With what? I didn't properly listen that word, Jennifer. With what? With whom?
The question is, if I may paraphrase, it's to please explain how we should choose the company, the friends that we keep in this progression.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that is where you need to recognize the good people and the bad people in a way, what you call as Sappurisa and Asappurisa. So there are many, what you can say as the measures that you can use. Say, if you are associating someone and he is always pulling you to the sense pleasures, always pulling you to something degrading your practice, say pulling you out of your spiritual path, then of course we can say it's not a good friend. So one, of course, you can try to sort of explain him or her that there is a more sort of a different approach, another alternative. So likewise, convince the other party. If not, if that party is simply following the typical sensual desires and sort of worldly values always and going after, you know, many different stuff and even the wrong, bad addictions, etc., definitely then we can say it's a wrong friend. But on the other hand, if there is someone who is also following the path and also trying to motivate others also in the path and sort of sharing the sort of things and in a way, say, developing faith about the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. So likewise, if someone is helpful in the spiritual side, then we can say, okay, good friend, or we can associate. We always sort of can learn something and we also get inspired. So then we can select in that manner. And there are other parts, other certain qualities that Buddha mentioned, that a good friend is always grateful. He remembers the good things that you do. The other person, the bad friend, is always forgetful. He's always ready to take advantage and quickly forgets the things that you do. He doesn't have any what you call gratefulness or gratitude towards the friend. He quickly forgets and finding fault. But a good friend always, even the slightest help that you did, he can remember. And he likes to help in return. And he never forgets it. He never look down. Rather, he is constantly grateful even for a slightest help that you did. That is another very good quality, what you call gratefulness or gratitude that one has. So that is an indication of a good person.
Thank you, Pansy.
And your friend is talking now.
Yeah, I will mute myself. Nandana, please ask your question.
Bhante, I'm trying to understand this equanimous mind,
yes,
that you talked about. So it appears to me as if an equanimous mind can be very subtle at the time we experience.
Definitely, yes.
Especially when we are mindful, when our mindfulness is established and we are experiencing something with our senses. Like for example, we are eating something that is very pleasurable to us. So I'm kind of trying to understand that in my experience, when I try to experience something as a pleasurable thing, like food, is it the moment I start my experience as pleasurable, is it possible for an unenlightened person like me to still be equanimous? So basically my question is it possible for someone to experience a pleasurable feeling as a pleasurable feeling, but at the same time remain equanimous?
Yeah, and it is possible. So point is, it is not that we are become somewhat callous and sort of indifferent to the situation. Rather, so while when you develop mindfulness, you prepare like some sort of an island. You prepare like some sort of a vantage point. While being there, you can operate. So you know that now you are experiencing a pleasurable feeling. But the mind is not much involved, and mind doesn't go and talk about it. Mind doesn't go and sort of, exaggerate about it. Mind stays within yourself. So you haven't lost your vantage point. You haven't lost your middle or center point. So similarly, say there are various sounds. You may be hearing, of course, but mind doesn't go and further involve. Mind doesn't go for a second thought. There may be various sights, you may see them, that's it. Seeing is just seeing. There are sounds, you may hear them, just it. So that is why, I mean, it is not that you are closing your eyes or closing your ears. Rather, the senses are quite open, vigilant. But you are able to maintain that stability. So that is where actually, this has to come through the practice. You have to find this balance through the practice. So it is not that now, say for example, assume that there is a person who has never practiced, who has never developed mindfulness, and he says, okay, I can maintain kind of equanimity with a friend and with even a person who is my enemy. So there, to some extent, it is good, not that bad. But on the other hand, there is a fair amount of ignorance involved. Because he still have the personality view, he still consider that he is an enemy, he is a friend. So likewise, these typical norms are there, but he is able to maintain equanimity. So this is sometimes we call as Ajnana Upekkha. Upekkha is there, equanimity is there, but based on the ignorance. His mind is quite indifferent. But on the other hand, the mindfulness practice and the development of wisdom has a different approach. Where you are become quite sensitive, you are become quite diligent, vigilant. At the same time, you are developing wisdom. So because of the development of wisdom, now mind don't go and involve. Because mind has seen how impermanent these sensory perceptions are. So whatever the seen, whatever the heard, and all these cognized, so how impermanent they are, how fragile they are, how unsatisfactory they are, how sort of beyond your control they are. So, I mean, experientially, mind has understood it. So as a result of this understanding, now mind doesn't want to go and involve. Mind has somewhat given it up, let it go. So this letting, because of this letting go, now mind has found its freedom. It is not by attaching with something that one has found the freedom, but by not involving, unattachment, detachment, say, letting go, now one has found the freedom. So this is the kind of the freedom that we have to recognize, that we have to appreciate, and this is where the profound equanimity is available. So it is based on actually the wisdom, not that kind of the ignorance. So this is where that we have to further and further develop. I am not saying that immediately this sort of a thing is available, but the mindfulness practice slowly helps us to come to this island, come to this vantage point, to come to this stability of the mind.
It's not it, but there is just one other clarification I want to make about that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to distinguish this subtle difference.
Yes.
we train one state of mind, which is like experiencing something as a pleasurable, as something that is pleasurable.
Yeah.
Now, there we have come into contact with the object. We have started maybe a perception as well, because we perceive it as a pleasurable thing or tasty food.
Yeah.
So there now. So I'm trying to understand whether I'm trying to deceive myself or not, because in my practice, I'm trying to see, okay, if I can see at least one thought while I'm experiencing that pleasurable thing, like food, even if I see one thought arising in my mind, like remembering where I ate the same food once before, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be a little agitation, right?
Correct. I mean, you are going to this is in a way very refined level of agitation that you are talking. It is not a real agitation, but kind of a little, very, very little subtle agitation. Correct.
But it's moving away from the present.
Yes. Assume that you are remembering. Okay. Now, this is how we start actually. We are getting a second thought. Okay, I am tasting some food. Now mind little involved, now mind getting little associate with it, and he is remembering, okay, I had this food at this particular day, at that particular place. Now another thought, assume that you didn't stop there, now you are adding another thought, okay, there were another friends there, so we went there, so we enjoyed that, so likewise we are adding something more. And then we are adding another path, so it was expensive and blah blah etc. So we are adding some more. Ultimately, while eating, we are in a story. Our mind is extremely involved. Our mind is in a dream. So this is what we are trying to completely stop as much as possible. So tasting is there. You may definitely feel the taste. You may definitely see. You may definitely feel the pleasure. You may definitely feel something is painful. But the mind does not lose its stability. Mind does not go and talk and become chattering, proliferate. But mind has maintained its clarity, maintained its calmness, irrespective of these sense impingements. So this is the kind of equanimity. Yeah, this is the kind of equanimity that we are talking here. It is not that always we are experiencing equanimous feeling. I mean, don't get misunderstand that it is not that we are always experiencing the state of sort of equanimous feeling that we can't. I mean, we may go for painful feelings. We may feel the equanimous feelings, of course. We may feel the pleasurable feelings. As you said, when you are experiencing some tasty food, definitely there may be a pleasurable feeling. But how about the mind? Is it go and involve with it? Is it go and trying to possess it, trying to own it, trying to hold it, trying to go and cling to it? So this is where we are dealing with. This is where we are trying to avoid. So if there is no attachment, if there is no attraction towards that, so you are able to maintain your stability. But the pleasurable feeling is there. Yeah. Good.
Right.
Okay, thank you. So I'd like to invite Shalika to please ask the next question.
Bhante, actually this is something related to the previous question as well. As an example, when I have like a desire to, eat something, and I, as soon as it comes, I understand it, I realize it. I eat that, and then I basically observe, I feel that, it's a pleasurable feeling, and then, it passes away, and I see that, because of my, I'm paying attention to it, I don't, develop like a story, like, oh, I should have that again, I should eat that again, like that. So my question is, basically, I had a desire, right, in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So, as a practitioner, like, you know, what we should be basically, you know, now focusing on, even not to have that first desire. Is that right, Bhante?
Yeah, actually, so that desire is what we are getting motivated. So that we feel that I can be really happy by having that chocolate. So this is how we think, we imagine. So we think to become. Okay, currently I am not a taster, so I want to become a taster. I want to taste a chocolate. With that, I can be extremely happy. So we are making a dream in our mind. So now we are approaching to the chocolate and assume that we are taking it. Now we are closing our eyes and enjoying it. Now we are in the tasty world. We are in a kind of a mind-made world, experiencing world. So this is the bhava. So if we are analyzing it in that manner, so we have a very beautiful Paticca-samuppada that you can reveal from this. So currently now our even senses are in operation in this Paticca-samuppada. But before we have a kind of a memory about that, we previously had this sort of a chocolate, this sort of a taste, and therefore kind of a memory about it. So we are, to some slight extent, we imagine it. Okay, if I have this, I can be happy. If I have that, I can be happy. So we make such a desire. So that desire is driving us. So if we are able to recognize that desire, so that is where you are talking. So are we able to recognize that desire, the first thought, the motivation coming in the mind? So if we can recognize, that is good. So then you can let go of that. But that does not mean that, we have to avoid eating at all and etc. Then we are going to another extreme. So, yeah. So, but at least in a way, we can avoid the greediness. We can avoid the driven nature. So typically, various desires are arising in the mind. We have become puppets of those desires. We become slaves to those desires. But rather than fulfilling those desires, are we able to recognize those desires? And if it is, and once you recognize them, you can properly evaluate, is it really necessary to fulfill this desire, or is it simply not necessary? Say you are constantly eating ice cream, constantly eating chocolate, whatever it is. Assume that there is no thirst, there is no hunger, anything, but you are driven by the desire. Then of course you are going to suffer. Assume that you end up with the diabetics or whatever it is, you are going to suffer. But assume that you are really hungry, then your hungry feelings are arising. Then you understand, okay, now I am hungry, so I have to feed the body. So that is something that you have to take care of, that you have to act upon. So likewise, we have the kind of the option either to follow the desire or either to drop the desire.
Yeah, so basically, Bhante, like, yeah, hungry, definitely, you know, it's a need that, you know, we have to have that food. But as you said, like, maybe a chocolate or ice cream, you know, something like that, it's not, you know, need, our body need is just entirely a desire. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a pleasurable feeling we had, you know, previously. That is why we want to, you know, have it again.
Yeah.
So, in that kind of a situation, so basically, you know, being aware of it, but at the end, basically, you know, what I should be doing is like, when that even desire arises, I should think, okay, you know, should I really want to have that? You know, should I continue that? Something like that?
Yeah, you have to honestly assess that desire. Very honestly, very humbly, you have to assess that desire. Is it really necessary to go after this desire? Is it really necessary to fulfill this desire? Or am I able to let go of this desire? Assume that your wisdom now is there to evaluate the situation. And assume that your wisdom is telling, okay, in the morning also I had one. During the afternoon also I had one. And now the mind is asking another one in the evening. Now assume that your mind is telling, no, it is not good. Because I am already sugar positive, so like that. So likewise, now that your doctor's advice also now coming to the mind, now you are able to calm down yourself. Now you let go of the desire. So likewise, we have to sort of humbly, honestly, we have to take an action rather than simply driven by the desire.
Yeah, it applies to all the senses, right?
Definitely.
It's not
definitely.
Just, you know,
yes.
Listening to music or like watching something, you know.
Yeah.
So, okay. Thank you so much, Bhante. Teruvan Sannai.
Yeah, Teruvan Sannai.
I'd like to invite Joseph to please ask the last question for the night.
Thank you. Teruvan Sannai, Bhante. Teruvan
Sannai.
My question is related to the other ones. About, say I'm walking, and I just a memory comes to mind. So I can say that I have no control over these thoughts that come into the mind. They sort of just appear through, without any kind of volition on my part. All of a sudden, I'm walking, and I have a memory. I remember a person or an event which seems to be completely random and have no, didn't seem to be any kind of a trigger, nothing that I saw that I can't make any connection. All of a sudden, my mind was sort of empty, and then all of a sudden, I realize I have this formation in my mind. And am I right to say that that is the non-self? That's at that point, it's like I'm not really sort of responsible for that. There's nothing. Like, it's not for me to sort of push that away. It's not to be sort of say, no, I shouldn't be thinking that, but just to sort of recognize that, okay, now this thought is here.
Yeah.
And to just, at that point, I find it sometimes I get confused between, you know, what is the sort of non-volitional thought that is just appearing, and at what point does it become like I'm adding to the formation? Like, sometimes it's obvious, I can tell when that's happening, but at other times it's kind of unclear. Like I can't tell if I'm just in a way still just walking equanimously without anything really triggering, but there's just a flow of
thoughts.
You know, the memories passing, and I'm wondering maybe if you give me a something to sort of help recognize when am I actually getting involved? Is there, you know, am I looking for when I'm sort of feeling the pleasure, or is it with the feeling aspect?
Yeah.
I don't know what making the question.
Yeah. So basically, now assume that you are driving a car. So while you are driving a car, you are simply passing by various shops, various pedestrians, and so many other things. So, but we are not stopping the car and start to talk with them or stop with those places, going to shops or any of this, but rather we simply drive through. So similarly, so we are in the walking path, there may be subtle thoughts coming in the mind, the background thoughts coming in the mind. So we don't need to claim them as mind, we don't need to respond to them, and they simply go away. And there's a beautiful saying like, thoughts without a thinker. So there are thoughts, but there is no thinker. So we are not going to involve. We are not going to say that, so I have to react according to them. I have to act immediately according to them. Actually, the discussion we had related to equanimity is the same. So there are sounds, but mind does not lose its stability. Mind is able to maintain the stability even though there are sounds. There are sights. Still, mind remains stable. Similarly, there may be kind of a subtle thoughts in the background at somewhat far, but internally with some close cocoon, with some kind of circumference, you have your stability. Now, as you develop the practice, so these thoughts become more and more weaker. So they become weaker and weaker, and they go far and far. So then further and further, your mind become clear. So at the beginning, it is very much like a very narrow area that you have. Your boundary is very narrow. Within that boundary, you have the freedom. But there are thoughts trying to creep in. But you are now aware, but you are not supporting them. As a result, they simply go away. You are maintaining your stability. But later, you are further strengthen your stability. Still thoughts are there, but they are quite weaker. They appear like in the background. They can't come in. They can't creep in. So likewise, as your practice develops, so these external thoughts become somewhat blurred. And they are there, but you are not bothered at all. And even there are situations, your mind is completely empty, completely clean. There are no thoughts at all.
And when the thought, say, does come, and, you know, I'm wondering, should I, like, just look at the thought or concentrate on the feeling in the foot or try and...
Yeah, I think at this level you can look at the thought because you are already established in mindfulness, so you can look at these thoughts but not get bothered by them. You are not afraid of them. You don't consider them as a real devil, real distraction, but rather you can cope with them. You simply allow them to come. You simply allow them to be, but quite disengaged. They are not yours. You do kind of distant observation. Now, as a result, it's also fade away. Now, this way it actually helps to further calm down the mind.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay, I will come. Okay, then, so we have spent about 1.5 hours. So with this time, actually, we are able to discuss some Dhamma and again went through the Satipatthana Sutta. So with that, we will conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Thank you very much for participation, and we will conclude the session by sharing of merits. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam. Sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam. Sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam. Sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddhika. Punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddhika. Punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddhika. Punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mamparam. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukhita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukhita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukhita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.